Welcome to the Wellsteading Podcast. This is episode 446. Today is April 13th, 2024. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder money manager at investablewealth.com. Well, hey, the market is in a tizzy right now. I actually don't have a whole lot to say to that other than what I've been saying for, you know, at least the past six months, if not longer. I've been overly silent and absent from the airwave the last couple weeks, for the most part, again, because I really don't have anything different to say from what I've been repeating over and over again. I did a couple weeks ago, though, buy into utility stocks. If you read my blog post at investablewealth.com, or if you receive those notification updates, then you're aware of that. And I, you know, at that time promised that I would come in with an explanation of why I bought utility stocks. I'm going to do that in this episode. Before I get to that, though, I do briefly want to mention a couple quick market comments. But again, I'm not going to dwell on them because this is everything we've been expecting to happen for a long time. What's happening in the market right now isn't or hasn't been out of the realm of what would be possible to happen. The market has suffered from way too much, if not euphoria, at least complacency. We finally are seeing the VIX rise up to at least show some degree of volatility. And even that, I think it's subdued. And I think it's, if anything surprises me, I think the fact that the market hasn't gone lower is really a surprise. Because the fact that inflation is higher than anticipated isn't a surprise. The fact that interest rates are higher than what was projected isn't a surprise. The fact that we aren't getting 6 or 7 rate cuts like so many people thought 6 months ago definitely isn't a surprise. And as far as what's going on with perhaps an imminent attack of Israel by Iran, well, you know, geopolitical stability hasn't been something that's been occurring for the last, 2.5 or more years? So none of this should come as a shock to anybody. Again, other than the fact that I think the market is holding up remarkably well. And one of the reasons that the market is holding up so well is because in recent weeks and months, we've gotten a better indication that the economy is actually improving. Leading economic indicators about a month ago, for the first time, showed improvement after having about, a 22 or a 23 consecutive month decline. Corporate profits are actually looking more promising. Now, as far as the overall S&P 500 and the fact that a lot of people were thinking that we're going to see 11 or 12% growth rates there in earnings, I'm still skeptical on that. But in general, if you look at the last 12 to 18 months, very few companies were having exceptional profitability. In fact, virtually all the profits in the S&P 500 came from a handful of stocks. Now, not all of that in and of itself was total gloom and doom. The reason that profits had declined so much in the last, 18, 24 months or so is because following the pandemic, with all that inflation, it gave corporations an opportunity to not only pass along price increases, but also to pad their profitability and drastically increase their overall profit margin. So just as we had to see inventories come down from the over-restocking that happened as a knee-jerk reaction to the supply shortages that we saw during the pandemic, we had to see a tapering off of corporate profits. But again, all that seems to be fairly worked through the system, both in terms of corporations returning to more normal profit growth projections, as well as supply chain disruptions, you know, for the most part, coming back into more of a normal situation. Now, having said that, and again, if you've listened to me for the last couple years, you know that I still remain a believer that we're not going through deglobalization, but that we have seen peak globalization. And I do think because of the Cold War that continues to advance, that we are going to see a reshuffling of the supply chain to where there's less reliance on countries that may be more adversarial, and whether that's, you know, Germany getting fossil fuels from Russia or whether it's the US and their trade relations with China. I think that is definitely causing a shift. That was something that was underway before the pandemic, and it's escalated since then. That's not going to change, I don't believe, and that is going to increase costs and price of doing business, and generally that's one of the reasons why I think inflation is running higher than a lot of people expected. In any case, I've already taken up way too much time discussing things that I've talked about for months and years in the past. But before I get to utilities, I do need to comment on the situation in the Middle East, just because of all the endless talking heads that are, you know, discussing an imminent attack on Israel from Iran. Well, listen, I'm old enough and I have a long enough memory to remember all the way back to when Jimmy Carter was president, and I can recall every presidential administration that's occurred since then, and we're talking about since like 1976, every presidential administration since Jimmy Carter, there has been one or more instances when either Israel was going to imminently attack Iran or Iran was going to imminently attack Israel. Again, as you've heard me say many, many times over the previous months and years, I'm concerned about geopolitical instability. And as a result of that, right now, I have a higher concentration in both oil stocks and especially in cash, that if something were to happen in the Middle East and oil prices were to go up even higher than they are right now, I would likely sell or unload most or all of my oil stocks, and I would use that along with my large cash pile to buy into the dip if the market falls apart. Now again, for the market to fall apart, I'm talking more than the little 2 or 3 or so percent that we've seen here recently, but I would buy that dip because, again, as you've heard me say for years and years and years, I do believe in the continued strength of the markets and especially of the companies and corporations in North America. And so to the extent that any of those would go on sale, I would be a buyer. Okay? Now, having said all that, why do I currently hold a position in utility stocks? And actually, it's an overweighted position in utility stocks. Well, just like I have concerns about geopolitical instability and continual rising inflation, and since I also believe that there will be companies that will continue to grow and prosper, and by the way, go back and watch that video that I put on the YouTube channel back in, I think it was May of 2022, when we were at the very beginning of the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, and everybody was worried about geopolitical instability and, you know, the fact that we might be on the verge of World War III. Well, I talked about three global choke points and how all those were favorable to the United States. That's energy, agriculture, and weapon systems. I still believe that. And those three sectors of the economy have a carryover effect, which I believe will continue to make the North American continent a growing, vibrant economy. So while I'm concerned about geopolitical instability and inflation, I also believe that long term, there are better places that you can invest your money than simply holding cash. And right now, given all the current market conditions, I think the utility sector is one of them. Now, the utility sector is made up of companies that provide consumers and businesses, you know, power and water and waste removal services. Personally, I think the biggest opportunities are in the energy side of it, specifically the electrical generation side. And if you looked at the list of companies that I bought, you'll see that that's mostly where they're engaged in. And I don't want to take the time to list off the 15 or so stocks that I bought. If you're interested, you can go back to my blog post. I have them listed there. What I do want to mention, though, and that's a question that I've received quite a bit about as to why I chose to buy individual stocks instead of simply just investing in a utility exchange-traded fund. Listen, I'm not at all opposed to investing in ETFs, specifically sector ETFs, when I think it's convenient, and especially when I want to do a fairly short-term trade. What I want to emphasize here is, for me, as of today, I'm looking at this as a long-term holdings. I don't mean like 6 weeks or 6 months. I mean long-term exposure. At this point, I don't see any reason to make changes for the next several years or more. And so because of that since I plan to hold these stocks for so long, it made sense to dedicate the time to go in and handpick specific companies that I want to own. So to me, that's really the difference of whether you want to just pile into an ETF or whether you want to handpick your stocks. One thing to be cautious of on an ETF, I guess really two things to be cautious of, is that just because an ETF says it's something, you know, doesn't mean that the label is always accurate, just like when you go to the grocery store and buy food. You got to read the ingredients. And so just because an ETF says that it's invested in the consumer sector or the energy sector or high-tech sector, whatever, look at the actual holdings and see if that is really the case or not. Oftentimes, you'll find that there are ancillary companies in there that you really wouldn't think should be. And even with that, the concentration is focused on a very small number of stocks. When I looked at the utility ETF that's pretty popular, it's XLU, that's X-ray Lima Uniform. When I looked at that ETF, I thought that I could handpick my own stocks, which would give me overall less exposure to any one individual stock than that ETF did. And then also, when I looked at the dividend that it was paying, I thought that I could, again, hand select favorable utility companies that I liked that paid higher dividends on average than what that fund was paying. So again, it was worth me taking the time to do it. The other thing is, remember, with an ETF, you are always paying some type of a management fee. And you don't necessarily see it, but there is a management fee being taken out of your account when you own an ETF. And since I plan on holding these stocks for a significant amount of time, and since my discount broker doesn't charge me a transaction fee to buy individual stocks, I think it made, again, a whole lot more sense just to buy the individual stocks than to buy the ETF. Okay, now when you look at the general S&P 500 and an ETF like SPY, you'll see that the exposure there to utilities is probably only around 3%. If you look at a broader ETF that invests in equal weight S&P 500, something like RSP, then you'll see that the exposure there to the utility sector is more like maybe 6%. So I'm taking a 25% much overweight exposure to utility stocks. Again, why would I do that? Well, I'm going to discuss these three reasons, but it comes down to value, growth, and defensive. Now, some of these are thought to be incompatible terms. You know, how can I talk about value and growth in the same sector? Well, let me tell you why. As far as value, the utility sector in general has much lower price per earnings ratios than the standard S&P 500. S&P 500, even today with the drawdown that it's seen, has future price per earnings ratios somewhere in the range of, say, 20 or 21 times. And that's also, I think, inflated because those valuations are based on earnings growth this year of, you know, 11 or 12%. Now, if you look at the utility sector in general, its companies are valued with price per earnings ratios significantly less than 20 times. And in fact, I think the growth valuations for the utility sector on their face value are attractive at somewhere around 6 or 7%. You know, when you think about overall GDP growth, that's significantly higher than GDP growth. And at the same time, while I think earnings growth valuations for the general S&P 500 are overestimated, I think earnings growth for utilities are drastically underrated. If you look at electrical demand growth projections as of today, they're twice as high as they were just a couple years ago. And that hasn't been taken by the analysts and plugged into earnings prospects for these utility companies. So while normally you would look at the utility sector as just a steady eddy type of GDP growth companies, I don't think that's the case in the current energy and other transitions that we're going through right now. So I do look at the utility sector as a growth category. I mean, think about it. If any of the hype that you hear about artificial intelligence or electric vehicles or chip fabrications in the U.S. and all the reshoring of industries coming back to the United States, I mean, all that comes back to the United States having a much larger industrial base and needing more energy production. And that's not even talking about all the data centers that are just growing out of proportion. All that requires more electrical energy. So this is one of those rare cases where I think you can look at the utility sector as offering both value and growth. And to make it a triple trifecta, I think it also can be defensive. And normally people would think of the utility sector as a defensive play. Because whether you're getting into a traditional recession where consumers are cutting back on spending or just a general slowdown in business, the bottom line is that we need utilities. From a demand perspective, it's fairly inelastic whether prices are going up or down. Because a consumer may cut back on how many cups of coffee they have at Starbucks, but they're still going to keep their air conditioning on in the summer. And even from an overburdened, over credit-reliant customer, it's still favorable for utility companies because while the government won't come in and subsidize your Starbucks purchases, I mean, to the best of my knowledge, you can't use food stamps at Starbucks. I don't know because I don't go to Starbucks and I don't use food stamps, but I could be wrong on this. But for the most part, the government won't subsidize consumer purchases of discretionary items like Starbucks, but they do come in and subsidize people's utility bills when they can't afford to pay them. So that's one of the reasons the utility sector is looked at as a defensive sector. And then also, it's the fact that they generally pay a reliable and above average dividend. Now, having said all that, that's normal reasons why the utility sector is looked at as defensive. I think in the current environment we're in, it's even more than that. I mentioned that I think the utility sector can grow because of things like artificial intelligence. Well, look at that overall artificial intelligence market. Because of competition among semiconductor companies, the best chip companies moves around. You know, 20 years ago, it was pretty much all Intel. And 10 years ago, it was drastically weighted towards Taiwan Semiconductor. Now it's all about NVIDIA. We don't know who it's going to be in 5 years. But when it comes to utility usage, we know that as EVs grow or artificial intelligence or more demand for industrial energy, it is going to have to come from a local utility company. For the most part, I know some of you have solar panels on your roof and you're off grid. And yeah, well, that's not the way it is for most consumers and certainly not for large manufacturers. These utility companies are effectively regional monopolies, right? In a lot of ways, they are state-owned enterprises. They're too big to fail. When it comes to you as a consumer buying electricity, I think there's very little chance that that electricity is going to be supplied to you by an overseas company in, you know, Taiwan or China or somewhere else. It's all going to be local and regional. So you don't have to worry as much about geopolitical issues in the utility sector as you would in normal multinational corporations. Another way to look at utility companies from a defensive characteristic, and this is more of a short-term or a near-term characteristic, but if you pull up a chart of most of the companies that I purchased or even just look at the standard utilities ETF, you'll see that the price action is what I would consider quite favorable. Because the utility sector has underperformed the S&P 500 over the last, say, 12 to 18 months, and a lot of that, I won't get into it, but a lot of that was because people did pile into utilities back in like late 2021, early 2022, in anticipation of a recession. They drove the price and the valuations way up. We never got a recession, and so consequently, people got buyer's remorse, and they pulled out and sold out of these utilities. So now when you look at the stock chart, it's more of a contrarian play, and the 50-day, the 100-day, and the 200-day moving averages are generally all converging right at the point of where the index or the stocks are trading. So I think it's very defensive from a momentum standpoint as well. Now, I can't predict the future. I don't have a secret algorithm. I don't know what the future entails. So I don't know if these stocks will fall apart in the immediate future. But even if they do, as I mentioned, my intent is not to sell at this point. I will simply collect the dividend. I think the dividends are substantial enough that it does put somewhat of a floor as to how low this sector can go, also considering the fact that there should be a great deal of support in the convergence of that 50, 100, and 200-day moving average. So for me, this is a long-term play, and you're just going to have to come back and see how long I end up holding them. So until the next episode, until then, as always, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best returns.